Hey everybody, and welcome back to another edition of the Dynasty Tradecast. I'm your host, Eric Wurzloff, better known on Twitter as @DynastyTrades, joined by my co-host, Nathan. Sadly, no Dan today, Nathan.
Yeah, Dan's got some real life stuff he's dealing with, so we're gonna anchor away, if that's a thing. I don't think it is. Sail away?
Not a thing. Neither thing people say. That's not
come,
a thing.
Come sail away. Come sail away with me, you know.
We're gonna persevere is what we're going to do, Nathan.
We're going to persevere. We can survive without Dan.
SAT words.
There we go.
And we're joined today by our guest, Andy Singleton. I actually did not mispronounce your name, which I am notorious for doing, Andy. At least I don't think so.
Yeah, well, I butcher all kinds of names, so I think mine is pretty straightforward and easy. It's like in the Nathan Powell tree of easy to recognize and pronounce names. So you did a great, fantastic job with that. And I'm super honored to be here, so appreciate you guys thinking of me.
Absolutely, yeah. And you can follow him on Twitter at People's Pen, and that's people with a Z, so People's Pen. And he also writes, I think you do a podcast too for Fantrax.com, right?
I do everything video related, and then we do an audio version of that video show. So if anybody, you know, too lazy or doesn't want to invest the time in watching the video, you can listen as a podcast.
We wouldn't do a video podcast because all we would see is Dan's giant belt for Scott Fishbowl. So we're just fed up with it.
Listen, if I ever am fortunate enough to be like in the finals of a fishbowl, you will not be able to hide from me bragging about it constantly.
Oh, well, if you listen to the show, you know Dan is literally mentions it once the show. So there you go. Hi, Dan. I mentioned it for you. Okay. Well, let's do a quick rundown of the show. And we're going to talk today about rookie sleepers and kind of second and third round picks in your dynasty draft. It should be a good show. But first, let me tell you guys about our listeners only 30% discount to RotoViz NFL pod or pass through the NFL podcast homepage. That's rotoviz.com/podcast. Your subscription gives you unlimited access to all of our NFL content, and it also supports the pod. And you can contact us via email. That's rotovizradio@gmail.com or on Twitter @rotovizradio. You can slide into those DMs. And remember, the Rotoviz Radio and its fantastic collection of podcasts are now available on both Blog Talk Radio and iTunes. You can find us along with the rest of the Rotoviz shows under Rotoviz Radio. And we have individual feeds for shows as well. So if you simply search like the Dynasty Tradecast of Rotoviz Fantasy Football Podcast on Blog Talk Radio or iTunes or your favorite podcast app, you'll find us. So make sure you click subscribe and leave us a rating. 5-star ratings and reviews really help people find the show when they're looking for Dynasty content. So on that note, before we get into the rookie sleepers, let's talk about a move that happened this week, and that is Dez Bryant being cut by the Cowboys. Still, as of recording this podcast on Monday night, we do not have a location for him. So I guess I'll just throw to you guys to make guesses on where he's going, and then also what your thoughts are on his dynasty value.
I think that the report that came out Monday night, and we'll see it, obviously, by the time this comes out on Thursday, we'll know whether the report was valid or just, you know, up in smoke. But the report right now is that his first stop is going to be the New York Giants. So I think that the Giants are a heavily reported spot, and the Houston Texans are also another one where he followed apparently like 4 Houston Texans players on Instagram. Oh, that must mean he's going to be at Houston Texans.
I did see that. I was like, that's the biggest non-news ever, but that's awesome.
Yeah, so, I mean, honestly, from Dez's dynasty perspective, I don't think that his landing spot matters all that much. For the most part, I think he's a buy low, a guy who's going to, you know, be valued at that mid-third round, late-third round startup value, and a guy you can get for – I mean, I legitimately think you could get Dez Bryant for, like, the 106, 107 right now. Like, his value has dropped so much that it – yes, he's aging, and yes, his, you know, body type doesn't really, you know, tend to age well. But I think Dez Bryant is a guy who you can count on for a few more wires here, 2 seasons at least. So, I mean, we talk so much about, you know, buying these aging receivers, and Dez Bryant's, you know, the example of he's actually getting to the point of like Jordy Nelson, but he's not even Jordy Nelson's age yet. He's still 29 years old. So I'm still buying on Dez. I mean, buying more so on Dez even after the release.
I mean, I think that valuation is kind of high now. I've been getting offers as a pretty avid Dez owner. Like, people are trying to get him for like an early second or like the 112. So,
but you're not, you didn't even come close to accepting that though.
Well, I'm not, but I mean, I do feel like, you know, I'm not going to lie. I certainly have thought about it. I'm like, man, maybe he's not going to get more valuable. I don't think like, cause he's an older receiver and those guys that while they're productive for your fantasy teams, they're not going to be, they're not going to be gaining value throughout the years. We talked about it on the show. So I don't know. I mean, it's tempting. I mean, I think his value is lower than the 107. I think his value is more like the 110 right now.
I was seeing all these tweets the last couple of days about ideal landing spot, what makes sense. And it was just bothering me. I tweeted out, are we talking about four Dez or are we talking about for a team? Because I think it really depends on how you're viewing Dez and what you want him to be. If you think he's a double-digit touchdown guy, if you think he's a 1,000-yard receiver, you're probably dreaming a little too high because we've seen he's completely tailed off from that, even when he was in that role and should have been the alpha dog. So if you're talking about going to a, you know, secondary role, I think the Giants to me kind of signals, you know, sticking it to the Cowboys more than anything else. Like I did not see this move coming. I did not see myself getting cut. So I'm going to go to their biggest rival and I'm going to go to the Giants. But the most interesting take I saw was, I believe it was from John Owing, who said a coaching staff who is on the, you know, on the verge of getting their walking papers just cut what is perceived to be their best receiver. So that tells me a lot about the player when you think of it from that perspective. Yep. If the coaching staff thinks this guy is expendable, then that you know, and not a team that's very laden with wide receivers at this point. So I don't know. You mentioned the 112. We'll get into this class in a little bit. For what Dez can be, 75 receptions, 900 yards, 8 touchdowns, I think, depending on where my team was, I would give the 112 for Dez at this point.
But would you give Dez for the 112?
Depends on where my team is, because I could see the angle of that. There's a lot of high upside guys in this class. I mean, you're basically playing pin the tail on the donkey after, you know, spinning around for a while to figure out which one of those guys it is. But, you know, if I'm rebuilding and Dez isn't really helping me in the next, you know, 2 years, then sure, yeah, I would take a first round for him. Even if it's at the back end.
The problem with that is that pretty much wherever he signs, there's going to be at least some slight value bump unless he goes to just some team where he's like third on the depth chart for some ridiculous reason. But I think that you have to at least wait for the signing for that value bump. And then the most savvy way to go about it is to wait until week 4, week 5 when he's had like a 2-touchdown game. And then especially if you're rebuilding, sell him off for, you know, a couple first round picks in 2019 or a first round pick and a second round pick in 2019. There are much better times to sell a player than when they've just been cut by a team. And in terms of the coaching staff that might be on their way out, I mean, this move and pretty much any move by Jerry Jones in the last 10, 20 years is – it's always screamed, okay, Jerry Jones is making this move, not the head coach is making this move or anyone else in the organization. Jerry's been always the guy in charge. So I think that this release had his handprints on it more so, or fingerprints on it more so than Garrett.
I mean, if you read the presser from Dez, he did not believe that at all. He thought it was Jerry who – he thought Jerry wanted him, which granted may or may not be true, but it sounded like the coaching staff in defense of that.
Well, the craziest part to me is – whatever you think of Dez, you know Dez, and you got to admit he has some value or should have some value. You look at what Brandon Marshall got traded for to the Jets. Like, he didn't even get a fifth or sixth round anything. Like, it was just, see you later. Go sign with whoever you want. So we play all these ideal scenarios. Like, I've heard the Patriots. I've heard the Seahawks. You know, the Bears. Everything sounds great because, you know, we have this image of Dez Bryant as this top 10 receiver, but – the team that had the rights to him didn't even want him. So I really don't know what that says. It's kind of a unique and just weird situation. It wasn't like he got cut for any legal problems or contract problems. It wasn't anything, just completely blindsided, I think, a lot of people. So it's a good talking point, but you know, there's going to be a lot of takes on this, even after he signs with wherever that is.
Yeah, and I think I don't know. I don't think I'm on the Dez train anymore. And I own him in a lot of places. I think I'm going to want out, I think, in a lot of spots. But I think I want the 108 if I'm stepping off.
For sure. All right, let's pivot to our next subject, Eric.
Let's do it. So let's talk about some rookie sleepers and second and third round picks coming up here. So I guess I'll just throw to you, Nathan. and just for the sake of not butchering names, but the first quarterback on our list here is Luke Falk. So why don't we tell the listeners about him?
Yeah. First, we're going to start with the quarterback position, which obviously lends itself more towards super flex leagues. These two guys we're going to mention probably aren't going to get drafted in one quarterback dynasty leagues unless they're like a 7-8 round rookie draft.
Or these guys like a Washington State guy like that loves him.
Sure. Other than that, these are pretty much super flex stash type targets. And the first one is Luke Falk of the Washington State Cougars. Falk's a guy that some people thought would come out last year. He had a pair of 38 touchdown seasons with 2015 and 2016. Followed it up with a little bit less impressive, 30 touchdowns, 13 interceptions in 2017. This is a guy, pretty much a four-year starter, five starts in his freshman season. So what are your impressions on Falk, Andy? And is he your quarterback? I guess it would be six after would be the big three, Lamar Jackson and Rudolph.
No, I like Luke Falk. So I for those unfamiliar, I'm pretty big into the draft. I've gone down to the last four Senior Bowls, do a draft profile series. So we're just wrapping up this week where we've covered 50 players, all quarterback, running back, wide receiver, and tight ends, more geared for dynasty fantasy football leagues and studying film, everything like that. Luke Falk is a guy we covered. So if you want extended thoughts on, you know, myself or the guy I do this with, my co-host, John Lobb, the Gridiron Scholar, you can go check out the stuff on Fantrax. But Luke Falk is the Pac-12's all-time leading passer, and yet he is not even thought of in the same breath as two other guys in the same league as him, and Josh Rosen and Sam Darnold. So that right there should be very telling. He's capable, but he was in a pass-heavy offense, and it wasn't necessarily him creating as much as what the offense was creating for him. He doesn't have the strongest arm. He was down in Mobile for the Senior Bowl. Didn't do anything to really distinguish or separate himself. So do I like him? To me, it's going to be more landing spot than anything. But I see him more as just a career backup, kind of in the Colt McCoy kind of mold, where you'll know the name and he'll have some value kind of as a throw-in, but nothing I'm really putting any – too much stock into that this is going to be the quarterback of the future for me someday.
So you don't think he has much upside is kind of what I'm hearing you say.
Yes, exactly. I think he's an NFL quarterback, but not a starting one, which means in fantasy he has even less value.
Yeah.
I mean, that kind of fits in the mold of the Mike Glennon a couple years ago and AJ McCarron this year, where he's a guy that's going to have a backup NFL job and maybe on a second contract, he gets a brief stint as a starter, but it doesn't really scream dynasty or fantasy upside. So we'll move on to our next one, and it is going to be Kyle LaLetta. What are your thoughts on him? Maybe is he your quarterback six? Basically, is there anybody after the top five I mentioned that you're excited about? But start with LaLetta, of course.
Well, LaLetta was down in Mobile at the Senior Bowl as well. He's a darling of a lot of people right now. A lot of people are high on him. Played at the smaller school, Richmond, which is Todd McShay's alma mater. So he's been hyping this guy up for a while. He's got a rocket arm, but he's another guy we profiled. He's everything for him is 20 yards or under. He's not that great beyond 20 yards with accuracy. I mean, he's got a strong enough arm, but he's not that accurate. And we're talking about a lower level conference of play. So for him to show weaknesses in that regard, that scares me long term. But I do think he can project to be a high-level quarterback. Everything – he really took my attention when they were in red zone and goal line situations at the Senior Bowl, because he was very accurate within 10 yards, within, let's say, 10 to 15. Those goal line situations, very efficient. And when you watch the film, like I said, everything in the 20-yard and under window, he's really good at. So I think depending on where he lands – if he's coming in right away, whether it be a team's projecting him as the starter or maybe there's an injury and he's forced into action, I think he could have success with the right coordinator scheming the game correctly for him, and it could mask some of his deficiencies at this stage in his career. But I do think he can project down the road to a viable NFL starter. So I do like LaLetta, but I don't know that I like him as much as certain people do. I hear him rumored to the Patriots all the time that he's the perfect Patriots quarterback. But then, you know, you hear that about guys like Mike White as well. So, I mean, is there anybody that's not the perfect Patriots player at this point? So,
No, they all go there.
Right. So Lillette is fine. He's somebody I would definitely take a flyer on in a dynasty format.
Yeah, I'm pretty much on board with you. When I see a guy who's playing against that sort of competition, I want him to see like 4,500 passing yards, 40 touchdowns. And we just didn't see that quite from Lillette. He had 28 touchdowns, 12 interceptions, 3,700 passing yards. I mean, not terrible stats, of course. But, you know, with the inferior competition, you kind of looking for a bit more. And you're right. With these lower-end quarterbacks, particularly in Superflex, it's all about landing spot. You got to have Falk or Lillette or wherever these, you know, lower-tier guys go. There has to be some vision of them starting in the next, you know, 18 months. So I don't think that he'll quite land there unless he goes in, like, the top 60 to 70 picks. So we'll see where he lands. And obviously it's more so draft capital than it is maybe landing spot, unless the landing spot is something of the likes of like a Drew Brees or a Tom Brady, where maybe they're old, but they don't seem like they're going to be giving up that starting spot anytime soon.
Right. I mean, where is the in the value in those super flex drafts? Where do you start looking for like a high upside guy like that? Is it middle of the third? Is that where you're going to start saying, okay, maybe I'll take a shot here?
I was going to say, no, it's more like the fourth and the fifth, because with super flex and with two quarterback, it pushes down all the players to where basically the entire second round has become the third round, because there's five quarterbacks that are going to go in the first 15 picks. So it's more a little bit later to where it's like a very end of bench roster guy, a mid fourth. Go ahead, Andy.
Yeah, I didn't hear the transition. Sorry. I mean, the Superflex obviously changes it, and that's kind of the reason for having Superflex leagues, is to, you know, give all these quarterbacks who have a name and a face to just a common average fan a fantasy role as well. But this class legit has 6, 7, 8 quarterbacks that you can viably see having value as a real life player and as a fantasy player. You're talking about who are the guys I liked outside of the top six. I'm assuming we're including Mason Rudolph in that top six, because if you miss out on one of these, you know, top three or four, depending on how you have it, he would be the guy I'd be, you know, trying not to miss out on if I didn't get one. I would want a quarterback from this year's class. I'll say that if I don't get one of those top three guys in Mayfield, Darnold, or Rosen, Rudolph's, you know, the guy I don't want to miss out on at the end. I like Allen. I like Jackson. I think there's extreme upside with them, but there's so much risk that I don't want to make the investment that it's going to take to get one of those guys. I was just mentioning Mike White when we were talking about Lillette. The last guy, and he's going to be one of the last guys we profile, and he's 50, is Riley Ferguson. And I know after the Paxton Lynch thing, nobody really wants to hear about a Memphis quarterback, but this guy has just such a unique style to his play that I don't know how that's going to translate to the league, because everything with him, he's a very accurate passer. Everybody talks about Mayfield and his accuracy. Ferguson was accurate and just has this weird style where it's like everything he's doing is on the run, and he's nothing traditional about him. So I don't know if that's good or bad, and I'm curious to see how that can play out, because I think, you know, a unique coordinator will look at this and say, hey, this is a weird and unique kind of trait that I'm going to try to use and exploit. So I'm curious to see what happens with Riley Ferguson. But after that, you know, you look at some of the other guys, I'm not really buying into any of these guys. Ben Kurt, you know, you got your Briscoe, Shimonek, Logan Woodside, JT Barrett, names like that. Like, we know them from college, but I'm out on them as pros.
All righty. Let's move on to the running back position, certainly more fantasy relevant for people who play in one quarterback leagues. And we're going to start with Nyheim Hines. He's a guy that's gotten a lot of pub on draft Twitter, and a guy that Metrics Twitter likes as well. So what are your initial thoughts on Hines, Andy?
So basically everybody we're going to be talking about tonight, we profiled with the exception of one or two. So you can go see all these guys and, you know, full 5 minute conversations on each of them. But initial thoughts, Nyheim Hines, track star, undersized, good speed, good burst, but not really somebody that I feel could be an every down kind of guy. He's going to have his own unique role. I think his upside, I saw somebody mention this. I wish I knew the name to credit with, but somebody said, don't forget about Deion Lewis. And maybe that could be Hines' upside, but I mean, that's an extreme upside for me. If you're looking at him as a pure runner, I'm not really 100% comfortable in that regard for that role.
Yeah, he's definitely a tweener. He started as a wide receiver in his freshman year. And that kind of does lead a little bit more credence to, you know, him not having any great production prior to his junior season, where he ran for 1,113 yards, 12 touchdowns. But I do still worry about the lack of production in his first two seasons, and a guy that, you know, usually NFL talents tend to show themselves in the first 2 years, and Hines didn't really do that. So, I mean, he's a decent flyer option, but I don't think he's much more than that. He's a guy that, you know, has some upside, but, you know, we'll move on to our next one. And this is a guy that we talked before the show, and apparently you had a hot take. Akram, I don't know why I'm stuttering on this right now.
Hey, you sound like me now.
Akram Wadley, ADP of 38. What are you thinking? Will he be an NFL running back?
Well, that hot take you referred to is a comment I made that I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't get drafted. And, you know, that sounds ludicrous, but I mentioned I've seen guys like Aaron Green go undrafted. You know, you've seen highly productive college players not get drafted. He was a major disappointment at the Senior Bowl. He was, you know, consensus guy that a lot of people were disappointed with, showed no interest at all in pass protection. Which has, you know, been kind of a knock on him to begin with, just kind of slight and undersized. You see the people in his corner making the argument for him. He's got electric, you know, skills. He's super quick, everything like that. But I just don't know that he can put it all together. And the speed at the NFL is going to. I think that was the big difference, where you watch his game tape, and when he's playing against some of these big time colleges and he's making these moves, you think, wow, this is Iowa. He's doing this. This could be a thing. And then when you get to an all-star kind of environment where you start to see that speed ramp up like you're going to see in the NFL, and all of a sudden he's not able to make the same jukes and get the same guys to miss. Well, now you couple all that with the lack of size that he's, you know, well documented. And that's where I think the questions start to come into play for me. I will mention one guy, though, from last year that everybody's going to know from the Super Bowl run, of course, and that was Corey Clement. He was a guy from the same conference that was, you know, different player, different size, everything like that. They're both from Jersey. That's the only link that these two have. But he was kind of thought of as a, you know, sleeper darling for, you know, some people, kind of went under the radar, didn't really have the best season, and then got a couple touchdowns here and there, and then was a fantasy option. And despite Philadelphia having so many running backs, we saw what he did in the Super Bowl in the playoff run. So now all of a sudden everybody's going back, and what did I miss on with Clement? I think Wadley could be that kind of guy where he kind of gets forgotten about after the draft. And then if we look down the road, if he does have some success, guys will be like, oh, the signs were all there for us to see from the beginning.
Yeah, and we talked about on last week's show when we did a little rookie mock that when a running back has a lack of receptions in college, that doesn't necessarily mean that they won't have receptions at the NFL level. But it is impressive when a guy who has a workhorse-type profile, 168 carries, 252 carries the last two seasons, and he does have that receiving profile where 36 catches, 28 catches in his last two seasons, 64 total catches in two seasons. So I'm all about when I can find a guy who's getting those rushing yards and also getting the receptions, that just shows that the team is that desperate to get the ball in his hands, which certainly means more like an Alabama or an Ohio State than it does in Iowa. But it still means something when a team is doing everything it can to get the ball in a player's hands like Iowa did with Akram Wadley.
Well, I got to make one counterpoint to that, and I agree with everything you're saying, but there are only so many jobs in the NFL. In college, you know, there's a lot more availability. And we're talking about microseconds of difference between each of these players and what's like the superior athlete to you or I if we're standing shoulder to shoulder with them on the street, and you know, this Hall of Fame caliber or all pro level player. So with the difference being that small, you look at a guy like Wadley, and yeah, I mean, he's the best thing Iowa has on its roster. So of course they're going to do everything they can to game plan for him and get him involved and everything like that. But now if you give me the option of Wadley versus 20 other running backs in this class, maybe, you know, he's not at the top of that list anymore. So that to me is also something that I don't think gets discussed enough, is when we look at the production, is it because the guy is just being fed that because he's the best available for that roster, or is it because he's carving out his own role? That's kind of like what we were talking about with Luke Falk before. Pac-12 all-time's leading passer, but how much of that was on him just being this dynamic quarterback as opposed to this is the guy under center in, you know, the air raid offense that's just going to get 40, 50 attempts per game. And at the end of a four-year career, you're going to look back and go, yeah, okay, he's the Pac-12's leading passer.
All right, let's move on to our next running back. And this is an interesting case of, is he a running back? Because he was one of my draft crushes when he was a tight end, or at least when I thought he was going to be listed as a tight end on my fantasy league, which is where most people play dynasty leagues nowadays. No offense to Fantrax, of course. I was very excited about Samuels when I thought he would be a tight end. He was listed as a tight end going to the NFL Combine. And basically, I was excited about the concept of a tight end getting, you know, some carries, getting some work in the receiving game. And tight end touches are so hard to come by that if you can get tight end carries, that's definitely something you should be targeting late in your rookie drafts.
Does that exist anywhere else, that there's a tight end who's carrying the football?
No. I'm not saying that he's going to be carrying it as a tight end. He can be playing the running back position, but on MFL, if he's listed as tight end, then you're getting tight end carries.
No, I understand. I'm asking if that that doesn't exist anywhere else, right?
No, I haven't seen it.
No, there's no other player on. I mean, there's always these weird kind of like Ty Montgomery before he really switched kind of situations. Like there's always some of those. So that's a new one, I think.
I you know, to that, I think I could get him dual listed on Fantrax if that was something people wanted. But I don't know that plays well in fantasy, because he'd be the only player, as you're talking about, that would have that kind of designation. So I.
Sneaky.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, basically my whole gist of putting Samuels on here is I'm not that interested in him if he's listed as a running back, because there's so many running backs available and he's pretty much a tweener guy. But if he gets the tight end designation and plays some tight end at the NFL level, then I'm very interested, because any tight end that gets carries is something I want to be invested in.
But wouldn't that be relatively quickly remedied, Nathan? I mean, if you're drafting...
No, because if he plays the tight end position and gets carries, then he's the tight end.
All right. You don't worry about the big switch happening and the value just falling out there.
I mean, it certainly could, but I'm saying that, like, there's a scenario, and maybe this is a hopeful scenario. There's a scenario where Jalen Samuels plays a career as an NFL tight end, but also gets the occasional carry, and that's the ideal scenario playing out for his fantasy value.
Now, see, you guys know I do baseball too, so this is where the difference comes in. So in baseball, you have positional, you know, requirements and limits, right? So, for instance, last year, Anthony Rizzo on the Chicago Cubs, first baseman, got second base eligibility because of these infield shifts they put on, right? The reason I bring all this up is because in the case of Jalen Samuels, I think the NFL, and I could be mistaken in this, is going to designate his position, and it's going to be one, and that's it, just one or the other. Now, if he's listed as a tight end and he lines up in the backfield and gets some carries, they'll certainly apply to a stat line, but I don't think where you could play him is ever going to come into play, because I think it's going to be an NFL designation. And if the NFL doesn't designate him as both positions, then I don't think you find any fantasy site that would be willing to take that leap and kind of create it. So I retract what I said before about,
MFL doesn't do dual designations. They only do one, and they follow RotoWorld for all theirs. So, yeah, we'll see how things play out with Samuels, but I figured I'd throw him in there. All right, we'll round up the running back position with this is one of the guys that you mentioned as one of your draft crushes, and it is Chase Edmonds. What are your thoughts on him, Andy?
Well, Chase Edmonds, real quick, just to go back to Jalen Samuels, if you don't mind, though, was you look at the production this guy put up at North Carolina State, and we were talking about Nyheim Hines a minute ago. This was his teammate there. So with Nyheim Hines running the ball as the main running back, he still got, you know, 182 carries and 1,100 yards and 28 rushing touchdowns in his 4 years at NC State. As a receiver, 201 receptions with another 19 touchdowns. So extremely, extremely, extremely productive was Jalen Samuels. So very unique player, and it really does come down to how teams want to use him. But if you listen to guys like Eric Galco and Sigmund Bloom, we're talking, I had a conversation about this on Bloom's podcast, and they were talking about, 10 years ago or whatever time frame it was, Antonio Gates changed the way we look at tight ends and the box out and the jump balls and all that kind of stuff. You know, Eric was saying Jalen Samuels is going to be the next wave of changing the game and how positions are viewed and used because he's just so dynamic and freakish. But Chase Edmonds, to transition to the Fordham guy, shout out to Dynasty Frank because we're talking about a Bronx university right now, Bronx Ivy League-ish university right now. But Chase Edmonds.
Well, Frank can't get any Ivy League schools, to be fair.
No, but he can walk past Fordham and feel the collegial vibe and sense coming out of there. But Chase Edmonds, another super productive guy in college. He was at Fordham, overlooked coming out of high school in Pennsylvania, super productive, didn't get any major offers. So he goes to Fordham and shy of an injury in his senior year would have shattered, division records for running backs. He's being comped to Devonta Freeman based on their size, which I hadn't really thought about. And then, you know, when I started seeing that name pop up, it kind of makes sense when you look at all the stuff he's done. Another dual threat kind of guy, can run the ball, can receive the ball as well. It's Chase Edmonds is one of these guys at the back end of your draft, and maybe not even at the back end, but you're talking about like the second, third round sleepers with potential high upside. Chase Edmonds is a guy that's probably going to fall to that range that you'd be hard pressed to pass on.
I mean, right now he's going at nearly the end of the fourth round, it looks like. So, I mean, he's getting well past that third round that you're talking about, Andy.
Yeah, and it would be wise to make an investment. I've said,
so where are you grabbing him? Maybe you were about to say.
Well, if you're going to say the fourth round, I'll take him. I'll reach for him, and I'll take him in the third. But what I was going to say real quick was I've been saying for months now, it's this year's draft is 1-1, and I've won out of the first round. So if I had any multiple first rounders stashed, I'm trading them back for multiple second and third rounders. I'd gladly take 2 second rounders over 1 first rounder this year, or, you know, 2/3 or 3/3 or however you want to break it down. And especially outside of 1-4 or 1-5, and then it just kind of falls off to, you know, of this blindfolded range where.
So am I hearing you right that after, like, from the 106 to where is, like, the next, like, throw a dart and pray range? You're saying to the end of the draft?
And no, it's not necessarily throw a dart and pray. It's just these guys are really, really – it's very deep. Like, I mean, this year's class is, to me, much deeper, especially at the wide receiver position of guys that could blossom. You know, I've looked at receiving classes in the past, and there's been an average of 32 receivers that get drafted every year. Of those, about a dozen or so have any type of NFL relevancy. I think that number is much more like 40 this year that get drafted, which would shatter, you know, what the averages have been. And of those 40, I think you're looking at seriously like 20 to 25 that could have NFL relevancy. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean to say a wide receiver one or a wide receiver two, however you want to designate it. But guys that are going to have value on your rosters, I think you're going to still be finding guys well into the fourth and fifth round this year, just because of how deep this wide receiving class is and pushes those names down. You have a few running backs as well that I don't love the class this year as much as last year. I've heard they're very similar, if not this year's better. I think last year's was clearly better, but there is some intrigue and depth with this class at running back as well. So I'd much rather have like I said, multiple picks going in the second, third, fourth, fifth round even, than to have two ones or 1-5. I would not want to be sitting on 1-5 this year.
Because, I mean, I would think, and just traditional rookie value tells you, if you have the 1-6, let's just say that, you could get the 1-9 and 2 seconds for that valuation, which sounds like all day, every day, that's what you're kind of advocating for.
All day, every day, and twice on Sundays. Yes, I would definitely go for that.
Nathan, any counterpoint on that?
I agree with this point about this being a deep draft at the skill positions, particularly wide receiver. But I think that there's a difference between an NFL player and a fantasy relevant player. There might be 20 NFL wide receivers in this draft, but there might only be like 4 or 5 relevant fantasy wide receivers. So I think there's a bit of a fine line there. So, I mean, that would be my only real counter to that. But
Yeah, the only thing I'd add in is just, and we'll talk about trading picks kind of towards the end of this thing, but I mean, just on a pure valuation, just make sure you try to get as much as you can if you try to pull off that strategy. Is like, guys will, like, even if you're willing to give 3/3 for, or get 3/3 for like the 110, you can probably get more on the open market. So shop it.
Yeah, and then the other important part of that is you have to value the roster spot, because
correct.
At this point, especially in leagues that have roster expansion, you kind of look, oh, I have 6 extra spots right now. But if you have to cut down 4 of those by August, then those picks, you know, there might be some 3rd, 4th round picks that you spend and you trade for, you might not actually get to use. So I mean, that is kind of like the underrated aspect of trading 2 or 3/3 for an early second or something along the strategy of Andy's trying to do the reverse of. I'm kind of looking to trade up just for the simple fact that I don't want to have all those guys on my roster when I'm trying to do roster cut down.
Yeah, you want to consolidate the depth of what you have, and I get that. And to that point, to take it to players, I certainly agree with what you're saying, Eric, and float it on the open market, because
yeah.
You might be surprised. Like, we were just talking about Dez at the start of this. If I got 1-6 and Dez is on the market and the guy will take 1-6 for Dez, I know what I'm getting with him, and I'm hoping to get another at least 2-3 years of that from him. And if that is somewhere between 60 and 80 receptions, somewhere between 700 and 1,000 yards, somewhere between 5 and 10 touchdowns, I'll take that and the guarantee of that right now over the 1-6, 1-7, 1-8, 1-9, something like that.
So you're not trading Dez then? Because, I mean, I think at the top of the show we kind of talked about trading.
I would trade for Dez in that situation.
Gotcha. Okay, just making sure.
Did I go back on what I said earlier? I'm not sure.
No, I think you're good. I think I was just misunderstanding what you were saying there.
Okay.
Okay, with that being said, let's go ahead and let me tell you about our sponsors over at the FFPC, or the Fantasy Football Players Championship, the home of season-long, high-stakes fantasy football. For most people, it's the off-season, but not for the FFPC. If you're ready to draft now, the FFPC Best Ball Leagues are drafting daily with entry fees starting at just $35. They have slow drafts and live drafts, so depending on your fantasy there. And if you like Dynasty, and as I've mentioned on other shows, I'm pretty sure you like Dynasty if you listen to this show. The FFPC has over 200 active Dynasty leagues with entry fees starting at $77 and going up to $2,500. That's $2,500. And here's something incredible. Not a single Dynasty league has folded in 8 years. New Dynasty leagues are forming right now with startup drafts launching right after the NFL draft. So don't miss the FFPC experience. Go to myffpc.com and register now. That's myffpc.com, the home of season-long, high-stakes fantasy football. All right, let's go ahead and pivot then off of that. And we got in some trading picks conversation there. So that's we'll touch more on that kind of wrapping up the show here. So let's talk wide receivers. And the first one's actually a guy who I was actually shocked to see his current draft stock. And that is Deion Kane, a guy who, in the offseason, even early offseason this year, I think was looking in the first round. And it seems to have plummeted kind of more into the mid-second now. So I'll kick over to Nathan, a guy I traded Deion Kane to in Kitchen Sink 4.
Fun fact, I once substitute taught at Deion Kane's high school. So there you go.
Well, fun fact, I did the trade and now have Aaron Rodgers. So what's up?
And I have Jameis Winston at a Debbie spot. Who cares? No one cares about your fantasy league. So Yeah, Deion Kane, he's a guy that was, you know, highly touted prospect coming into Clemson. Pretty much every wide receiver these days is highly touted entering Clemson.
Yep.
He's kind of one of those guys that seems like he didn't really develop quite to his potential during his college career. Definitely one of those players that if he's going to develop into his fantasy potential, it's more he's going to be a better NFL player than he was a college player. Definitely needs to add some pounds, you know, of strength if he wants to be, you know, a red zone type weapon. But he is a big wide receiver and a guy who can score touchdowns and is a deep has been a deep threat at Clemson. So I'm a fan of Kane, and I think that the fact that he has now has an ADP of 30, which is in the mid third round of a rookie draft. Wait, it's 22. Is it 22 or 30 yet?
Yes, it's 22. Sorry, I'm looking at it right now, so I'm just
Okay. I don't know why I wrote 30 earlier. 22. Yep, anyways.
I saw it, and I was like, fix it.
All right. Well, an ADP of 22, late second round, that's still a palatable price for a guy that I think has a big upside at the next level. We'll see where he lands, and hopefully gets a good shot with a wide receiver depth chart.
Well, he's one of those guys, and I know Kane as well. He's certainly a guy who has upside, who could explode and has the draft pedigree, or probably will have – I'm sorry, has the high school pedigree to really blow up in the NFL and did perform in college on essentially a team full of pros or a ton of them. So Kane's a guy that intrigues me at that price tag, but certainly scares me as well because he didn't develop to his full potential.
I think he was hindered a lot, though, in his last season with Kelly Bryant as opposed to Watson. And obviously we've seen how good Watson truly is now that everybody's proclaiming him the QB1 and, you know, dynasty.
What happened to Carson Wentz?
I'm half being sarcastic.
Oh, it's not that crazy, man. It happens that quick.
Right, and it is that crazy because nobody wanted to draft him, and then all of a sudden, you know, everybody says he's the greatest thing ever after, of course, Jimmy G. But Deion Kane has a great size, 6'2", 202, but I really think it depends. I agree with Nathan about, you know, bulking up a little. He's okay for where he is now, but if, you know, you want to be that every down, dependable, durable guy, he could stand to use a little more strength. His hands are a little small at 8 3/4. I know we've dispelled plenty of hand rumors, especially for receivers, but he's the only receiver I've seen under 9 this year. So, I mean, that kind of stuck out to me. But to me, it all comes down to how are you viewing Deion Kane? Are you looking at him as a day one, first round NFL wide receiver getting drafted, which is going to elevate his fantasy perception if a team is going to invest that high in him? Or are you looking at him as a flyer with upside? 22 is a nice price for him because I do think he has that upside. If he was any higher, if we're talking like, you know, shouldn't say any higher, but if he was like in that 10 to 15 range, I'd be a little more hesitant because I do think there are some blemishes on his resume. I see a body catcher. I see somebody that shows concentration lapses, somebody that, you know, he does track the ball well, has good straight line speed, but he's not a complete receiver yet at this point. So if I'm investing that high, I want a guy that's going to be doing a little bit more than just running fly routes for me. I don't know. That's just my personal take. But I do like Kane's upside, and again, it really depends on that ADP. So if it's 22 right now, I think that's actually a bargain for him.
All righty, let's move on to another wide receiver that I view as a bargain, and that's Florida wide receiver Antonio Callaway. He is being drafted at an ADP, a rookie ADP of 35 right now, and he's a guy that was highly touted in the Debbie community, a guy that was being highly valued. But because he had some off-the-field issues with a credit card scam, and then it's actually been reported that since the combine, he's had some more off-the-field issues that it was very vague what those exactly were.
What credit card scam, just out of curiosity, for those that don't know?
Basically, like Florida boosters gave him fake credit cards and shit.
Well, I heard that could be it. I heard a different story that I thought was him and 8 other teammates, or 9 total, had meal cards that they were just putting money on, and they were using those. That's what I heard it was. But if it was, it could be credit cards included. It could be all of the above. And, you know, his range of outcomes is Antonio Brown and Reuben Foster. So, you know, I mean that with good and I mean that with bad based on what's going on with Foster right now. But this guy should probably be the best wide receiver in this class, but because he hasn't played the last year, because of all the off-field stuff. And some of that is vague because you mentioned the report since the combine, more red flags have come out from credible NFL sources, but no stories have broken. And we're in a day and age where everybody wants to, you know, fry people these days, and not one detail has come out on what these additional red flag reports are. That to me is a little puzzling. He's basically a lightning rod. I mean, don't go and defend Antonio Callaway as a person on Twitter, or you will not be happy with the results you get, because of course there are going to be people that say, oh, he's a bad dude. I don't know the dude. I don't know if he's good, bad, indifferent. Sure. I just know that from the stories I've seen of what he's done wrong, it points more to a young, immature guy who has hung out with the wrong crowd and is easily influenced, which means he could just as easily be influenced in the positive direction. It just so happens to be coincidental that that's the same school Aaron Hernandez went to. And, you know, when we go back and we look at all his checkered past, to me, that was, wow, that was a bad dude. He was refusing to pay his bar tab to the club owner and then sucker punching him, knocking him out and breaking his eardrum. That's a bad dude. Sitting as the passenger in the car that gets pulled over because the driver didn't have a seatbelt on, and oh, you have a pipe in your pocket, so we're arresting you for weed. That to me is just, you know, that's not necessarily a bad person.
That's legal here, man. So it's that would get you nothing in Colorado.
Right. So, you know, but if you're talking about Callaway, the player, like I said, they share the same first name. You watch him on film. He looks like Antonio Brown to me.
I guess you're saying he's a value, Nathan. I mean, I just from what I'm hearing you guys say, as far as his past, that doesn't, I mean, I'm for fear of defending the guy, but just doesn't, from just your description of it, sound that bad. What valuation are you, where do you see, you know, in your rookie draft, where are you reaching for Antonio Callaway?
I anticipate him going in the sixth or seventh round of the NFL draft, in which case I'll be picking him in like the 304 to 306 range.
Okay.
But this is all about the NFL teams will tell me how much they care about the credit card scam. The NFL will tell me how much they care about the weed stuff earlier in his college career. So as much as the NFL cares, I'll care. So like if Callaway goes in the second or third round, he can shoot up all the way to the early second of rookie drafts.
Sure.
But it's literally all about what the NFL tells me with the draft stock.
If he goes undrafted, are you just not even bothering with Callaway then?
No. I mean, I'd use a fourth round flyer.
Yeah, if there's none of this, you know, off field issues, he's a first round dynasty pick.
That's what you want, really, when you're making those reaches in the third and fourth rounds.
Yeah, so it's definitely a high upside, low risk pick at this stage. We'll see where his ADP goes once he gets drafted. But I fear that this may be one of those situations, though. He could go in like the seventh round and go to like a ideal situation, and then he ends up getting overdrafted going in like the 202, 203 range when, you know, so often we overlook situation and don't think about, oh, he was the seventh round pick and he's not going to get the immediate opportunity. So,
sure, or make the roster at seventh round.
For sure. Let's move on to our last player of the night, and it's going to be Richie James of Middle Tennessee State. Fun fact, Middle Tennessee State was the first college I was ever accepted to. So,
there you go. Directional Tennessee, Nathan Powell. What's up, man?
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Oh, that was like 10 years ago. So, anyways, Richie James, I'm a fan of his, not just because I liked his school once upon a time. High production at the college level. He got hurt in his last season. I was a little bit worried that he would stay for his senior season after the fact that he, you know, got injured. But fan of Richie James. What are your thoughts on him, Andy?
Yeah, he's awesome. I got to interview him. Super, super productive. I mean, Middle Tennessee State isn't exactly, you know, beating the drum as, you know, one of the blue bloods of college football, but they've, you know, become a better program over the last few years. And this is the same conference that has Western Kentucky. So, you know, you look at guys like Taywan Taylor last year, and this is my argument. If you can't love Taywan Taylor in the 2017 draft and think Richie James playing in the same conference is any less of a player. He had ridiculous production as a freshman and sophomore. He's Middle Tennessee State's all-time leading receiver in those first 2 years as a freshman and sophomore. A little bit undersized, but he, to me, plays like what I read people say DJ Moore plays like. People tell me DJ Moore plays like Steve Smith. I get it, I guess, on a play or two here or there, but not consistently. Richie James, to me, is that guy on every play. He's looking to run people over. He's hard to take down. He will run through five guys and somehow come out of that. He's, you know, a good deep threat. He's good. He can run. He was a quarterback. He's a do-it-all guy who's going to get knocked down because of where he played, because he has missed some time now this past season with injury and because of the size. But if you're looking for a guy that you can get basically for free, that people potentially are going to be looking at going, how come I never heard of this guy Richie James before? That's a high upside, low risk kind of player you can draft in Dynasty. And this is the year of the slot receiver. So you have a ton of high-end slot guys, and Richie James could easily be on the same production level as some of the bigger names you can hear about, like Christian Kirk and DJ Moore, as I mentioned, and Anthony Miller, James Washington, guys like that.
Yeah, this is the keep it simple, stupid take of the podcast, but if you can get a guy who has 212 catches, 2,900 receiving yards in his first two seasons of college football, that guy is good at football. There you go. Yeah.
There you go. Exactly.
Nice. All right. Well, let's transition and talk about we kind of hit on it, and maybe we'll just keep it short to wrap the show, because Nathan has promised that this will be a short show this week. We'll see. We kind of already talked about quality over quality. I'm sorry, quantity over quality. And I think Andy made a good point in just kind of once you get past a certain point, just more picks is good. And I think Nathan made a good point in saying that if your rosters are set up inappropriately, more picks are bad. Anything else to add to that before we kind of – anything else? I guess I'll just say anything else you guys want to add to that.
I'm good with what I said.
I was just going to say, I noticed Ian Thomas was on the docket and a couple tight ends. That obviously I'm talking way too long if this was going to be a short show. So I apologize.
Go ahead, Andy. You're here, man.
I do this every show. Like, we write up a bunch of stuff and I end up deleting half of it. So just because I try to be a little bit more succinct.
Well, no, I was just going to say, I apologize for talking so much, but this is my first invite on and I'm truly honored. I mean that when I say that. I actually canceled other plans to make sure I was able to be available for you guys. So listen, I'll talk to you guys all night, and I don't care about the length of your show because I might not ever get back here. So
at this rate, you're well on your way to a second visit, sir.
Well, I'm almost talking into next week's episode. So.
Okay. Well, no, I mean, if you want to talk about one of the tight ends, I vote, and I think my vote matters the most, is I vote you do it. Damn it.
Go ahead.
I'll do the Nathan, keep it simple. Go watch my profile on Ian Thomas. You'll love him. Tight end, could be the most dominant tight end in this entire class.
Where are you drafting him?
Where am I drafting him?
Yep.
He's going to get some buzz. I would hope I wouldn't have to pay anything higher than a mid-second.
You're not going to have to pay higher than a mid-second.
Yeah, really, any tight end is pretty tough to do that, I guess. Except you know, for the last draft class.
We all target the guys we like and our guys, and then
no, I'm not saying it's a bad take to like want him at that value. I'm just saying like you're not going to have to.
Oh no, and I'm saying I'm happy to hear that news, because I'm saying like we target our guys, and you know, I'm thinking without really having too much grasp of ADP at this point. Of the year for Dynasty, I should say, that I would not feel like that's too high to take a guy like Ian Thomas in Dynasty, because I think the upside is there for him. If I don't have to spend that, great. And that's what I'm saying. Like, we have our guys that we start thinking, like, these are the five guys I want to come away with. Well, if you're sitting there on your second or third pick and a guy you didn't expect to be there slides down, all of a sudden, you know, your board is changing at a very quick pace. So, yeah, Ian Thomas, watch the video. Good upside, and a guy that we will probably be looking back a couple years down the road and saying he should have went higher than a mid-second round pick.
Yeah, I mean, right now, Andy, just to give you an idea, I'm the ADP I'm looking at has him not even being drafted.
That's insane.
In a four round draft, which is pretty typical,
that is awesome.
Not even being reached for, and barely makes it into a five round draft.
Well, that is fantastic.
Fantastic news for you. Yeah. All right. Let's go ahead and just real quick, we'll just hit on a couple of these things. let's talk about trading while you're on the clock when you're in your rookie draft. What kind of strategies do you guys have? Because that's the time when your pick, if somebody is excited to move up, is worth probably the most.
Yeah, I think that particularly with the later round rookie picks, this is where you can kind of just call your shot. Like, especially if it's a guy that is being like, oh, this is the guy that slid too far, or this is the guy that's the most highly valued ADP. Just say, hey, I'm taking Antonio Callaway right now. If anyone wants this pick, come and get it. Because people will get like overranked. So, oh, I can't let him take Callaway. I need to go trade up for him right now. So, I mean, most of the time, I think mind games don't necessarily work, but I think they can work in the later rounds of rookie drafts because people just get so, you know, hyped up about those late round rookies.
It's like the time somebody gave me 4/4 for Bucky Hodges. That was great.
It was
the 407, by the way. 4/4.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, that's, and I don't know that I'd even call what you're doing there, Nathan, really playing games. You're more like, look, this is a pick that I'm not that pumped about making. You're not goofing around, and you're like, come and get it if you want it.
Yeah, I feel like it really comes down to, for me at least, like how engaged your league is, because I'd rather deal on the clock because it's happening. We're here. This is what's available to me. I don't really love it. I'm ready to go. Who wants to make an offer? And if you got the guy, oh, hold on, I'll get back to you. And then you basically at the end of the window, and now you know, can we get a 5-minute recess, or you know, just buying for time, and then nothing gets done. That's the annoying part for me. But I'd much rather deal on the clock because all your scenarios are presented there for you.
I mean, I think being honest with what kind of league you're in, as you're kind of saying, is the key there. Is like my friends league that I managed to convince all my real life friends to play Dynasty. There's like 3 trades made a year. And when our rookie draft is basically just, okay, I'll pick now. And there's very few trades. So and then there's other leagues that are completely insane in the rookie draft. So yes. Being honest, because in that friends league, you better believe I'm not able to trade picks, so I got to pick who – I got to reach for guys where I want to.
Yep. All right. Let's move on to our last topic. And for me, and we talked about this with the roster spot thing, the move that I tend to make the most when I start, you know, struggling for roster spot space, especially if I have a few fourth-round picks, if I can trade – 2 2018 fourths for 1 2019 third, or trade, you know, 3 2018 fifths for 1 2019 fourth. Just getting, even if I have to package 2 or 3 of those picks, one pick up in a future year, I'm all about that because I buy the roster spot for this year and I get the higher pick for the following year. And the person that's making this trade, they're not, you know, getting hoodwinked or whatever. They're getting something right now. They're going to get tangible assets.
Nathan, hoodwinked?
Bamboozled.
You say chasm like every other podcast, so I don't want to hear you.
No, you're not mispronouncing it. I'm just that's just an incredible word usage.
He went to Middle Tennessee State, man.
I didn't go to Middle Tennessee State. I know. Got accepted. No big deal.
That's hilarious. But yeah, I mean I love the move as well. I love, like, if I'm out of roster spots on my roster and I don't want to go a direction, like, I'll just straight up trade late picks for just future picks of the same value, just so I can, you know, get out of it. So I like it, Nathan. I like the way you put it too. It's like trading, you get a roster spot and a future pick.
I definitely love the way you put it, but I will tell you this, and Nathan, I adore you because you are like the younger brother of you're aging now, obviously, but you've been like the younger brother of so many guys in the industry, right? I say that with affection. So
yeah, of course.
So I tell you this because when you start getting to my age, I've had multiple people in multiple dynasty leagues die. Like that, this
oh, Jesus
a product of
oh
life.
Oh my God! So, I did not think this was coming.
Yeah. So, you know, when you guys start to get older and you start to factor things like that into
Andy,
life.
How old are you? 40 at tops? What is this?
I'm 43, but. There's been several leagues that I've been in, and I don't mean to be laughing about death, but it's a reality of life, right? So
don't trade for future picks because you might die.
You never know what's going to happen. That's all I'm saying. You never know what's going to happen. Live for the moment.
That is one direction to end the podcast on. So on that note, I think we'll kill the podcast. Andy, awesome to have you on the show. Appreciate you coming in and dropping your knowledge. If you enjoy what Andy's bringing to the table, make sure you follow him on Twitter. That's People's Pen. That's people with a Z and then pen. And that's P-E-N, not P-I-N. P-I-N wouldn't make much sense. And then you can find a lot of his work on Fantrax.com. And you can see his mug on his video podcast, which we don't have.
Yes, you can. Just search Andy Singleton on Twitter. People's Pen will come up, follow. And I am a shameless promoter of work I do, as well as others and guest spots I appear on, such as this one. So go check that out. As I mentioned, NFL Draft Profile Series. We just covered 50 players. So go check that out. All quarterbacks, running backs, wide receivers, and tight ends. And you'll get an introduction and extended look at all of these guys.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Okay. Well, Nathan, anything before we sign off on the pod here?
Ganoush.
All right. Well, make sure you leave a 5-star rating and review on the show. Hopefully you enjoyed it. For Nathan, Andy, and myself, wishing Dan well, and we'll see you guys next week.